Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Lana Nachtigall. Hi, Lana.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. This is our special Thanksgiving combined Local Talk and Donna Lana Kitchen.
Yeah, why not? Sounds good to me.
Well, half of a Donna Lana Kitchen, but it's great to have you here because you will add so much spontaneity to this feast that we're going to have. And also, Lana is very special because she is both a farmer and a wonderful cook. And today's Thanksgiving interviews are with a couple of people who grew up on farms, were farmers, and have memories from long, long ago. And they'll tell us what their early Thanksgivings were like as well as what it's like today.
That sounds good. Toward the end of the year here, things kind of get cold and gray and snowy even this time of year, and it's really nice to think about gathering around a warm kitchen table with those that you love, or even your relatives. You'll have a good time. I know you will. This is Thanksgiving week, so let's talk about the Thanksgiving celebrations.
Well, I found when I talked to our two guests, our first is Virtus Brockman from Marshall County. And our second is Donna Null, who grew up in North Polk. And they really thought about the food, not so much the food that was served at the Thanksgiving table. They thought about the food that they produced and that it was ready for winter.
Oh, good.
So let's hear from Virtus Brockman. Just a little bit of how he came to the farm.
This is Virtus Brockman. I was born in western Iowa. Then my father bought a farm in 1946 at Melbourne, Iowa. And I've lived in this same farmhouse since 1946. At that time, I was 16 years old.
Well, what did you eat?
We ate whatever my mother raised, chicken, hog. We milked a few cows. I learned how to milk at the age of six.
Well, I imagine you did lots of chores,
I did. As those years went along, I also learned how to hand-pick ear corn by myself with a team and wagon. Our high school had 2 weeks of corn picking vacation, or harvesting, whatever you want to call it. And I had my own team and horses. And that, I was a teenager.
So what did you raise besides corn?
They had hogs, milk cows, and fed a few cattle. This was during the Depression. Thanksgiving time, we had some ducks to eat.
Were they domestic ducks or wild ducks?
Domestic ducks. And my mother also churned her own butter, and we had buttermilk soup. Pretty darn good.
She must have had a garden where she raised some potatoes and carrots.
Absolutely. She had a big garden, even had some gooseberry bushes, and made some gooseberry pie. Haven't had any gooseberry pie in 50 years.
Well, I remember hearing about gooseberry pie. It required a lot of sugar. Was the sugar a problem?
You took the eggs and stuff to town and traded it for some groceries. That's kind of how it went.
Did you always have enough to eat?
I think we did, but it depended on how big a garden you had.
And how big a family, I suppose.
I had two brothers. There was just three of us, and my mother and dad.
So how early did you start to plow?
Probably 12 years old.
Where were you in your sibling position? Were you the oldest, youngest, middlest?
I was the oldest.
And did that mean that you continued to plow, for example, when your brothers got a little older, just because you were the oldest?
I suppose that's true, because I was 5 years older than they were.
Were there other chores that I've forgotten to ask you about?
Oh, one of the big chores was to gather up the cobs out of the hog lot, so we'd have it for the cook stove.
So part of farming was getting the fuel. Now, you live on a farm. How do you get your fuel?
Well, I don't suppose many people do this in Iowa now, but my husband and I heat our house mostly with wood. So people ask us what we do during the fall and winter when the crops are all done. Well, we fire up our wood stove and move firewood around, and it really does heat you twice. We're cutting firewood, and actually, if you're going to do that sort of thing, you have to think ahead. You can't just go out and whack down any tree and put it in the wood stove. You have to plan. You have to let it be very dry and well taken care of, so it's cut, split, stacked, and then moved into the house. And you should the wood around here, we plan on at least letting it dry for a year. So you plan ahead. You plan ahead. It's an interesting way to heat, and it's a lovely way to heat. We also we're not just huddled by our wood stove. We live in a really nice solar house that soaks up a lot of sun on a sunny day too. But I suppose not too many people just use the sun and wood. But that's one way to do it.
Well, when he talked about the corn, burning the corn, in a house near his, as a matter of fact, it's Mark Rundquist and Linda Barnes' house in Marshall County. And they're the ones who told me, Mark is the one who told me about Veritas. And they have a corn stove.
Oh, I've heard of those. I don't know too much about that.
I think they actually burn the kernels, though.
Yes, that's the kernels, yeah. Because that's higher in oil and all sorts of things. As I recall from listening to stories from Dad and Mom and Grandpa, the corn cobs were very dry and very good quick heat for the cook stove, not necessarily for the long term warm your feet at night. But those I bet dry corn cobs would be quite handy for getting your kettle boiling.
Right, and of course, since the pigs ate the corn off the cobs, they didn't have the option.
How handy! Use everything.
Use everything. That's exactly right. And in the further discussion with Veritas, he talked a little bit about how important the harvest was at Thanksgiving. So let's listen in on that.
When you were picking corn by hand, you just were praying that you could get done by Thanksgiving. And I think that was it. And if you weren't done, you went out and picked some more corn.
So the Thanksgiving part was really the traditional thing. You were thankful for having the harvest in. Is that right?
I that's what I would say, and you still have that on your mind today.
Getting the harvest in.
Right. My son does the farming, and I help him harvest. And I tell him I work for free and I'm worth it.
Well, this year, when did you get the harvest in? When was it finished?
We got done the ninth day of November at 4:30.
So that's a pretty memorable time for you.
It is. It is. It's a big time when you start planting and getting done planting, but it's bigger time when you harvest and get done harvesting.
Was the 9th of November an unusually early time, or was it just a regular time?
Oh, here a couple of years ago, it was first week in December before we got done. Because of the snow and the rain and the ice and who knows.
Well, was that a bad Thanksgiving then for you?
Now the Thanksgiving is getting together with a couple of my children and also grandchildren, and also about a dozen great-grandchildren, and everybody has a good time.
So you have a lot more traditional family Thanksgiving now than you did when you were growing up.
Oh, absolutely.
That was then and now. And it's nice when now is better than then. And I think he did say it was better, a lot better. Do we have some music now? Let's play the traditional Over the River and Through the Woods.
Over the river and through the woods to grandfather's house we go. The horse knows the way to carry the sleigh through the wide and red. Stings the toes and bites the nose as over the ground we go. Over the river and through the woods to have a first-rate play. Oh, hear the bell ring, ting-a-ling-ling, hooray for Thanksgiving Day. Over the river and through the woods, trot fast my dapple gray. Spring over the ground like a hunting hound, for this is Thanksgiving Day.
Our second interview was with Donna Null, who grew up in Polk County. And we particularly wanted to bring her in because she does come from the periphery of our area. And she's got a very different story, really, than Virtus has.
Oh, my name is Donna Drake, married name Null. I grew up on a farm 3.5 miles south of Sheldon, Iowa. Loved living on the farm. I had many siblings. I was 10 of 11 children. My father farmed, of course, and my mother was always busy with raising chickens, helping on the farm, raising a large family. At that time, no modern conveniences. It was a cook stove. It still amazes me the baking she could do in a cook stove where you didn't have a temperature gauge like we have nowadays. Loved all of the home-cooked meals. Didn't know anything different. There were no fast food places at that time. I was 15 when I lost my mother, but I do remember prior to that time her many signature dishes. One was a sour cream chocolate cake that everybody loved. I still remember that. And, of course, everything made from scratch then. I remember they raised their own meat, chickens, hogs, cattle. I remember my folks having a locker in Slater that they would keep the meat in after it was butchered. After my mother passed away, my older siblings were the ones who were then gone from home and married with families, and that's where many times on holidays we would go.
So the family gatherings were important for you at Thanksgiving?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Had many nieces, nephews, cousins. We would all... I can remember many Sundays getting together. You visited relatives or they came to your house. I have old pictures of these family gatherings. Men would go out and play horseshoe, and us kids, we had a pony, so we used to ride the pony a lot. If it was snowy, we had a hill on the farm. We could slide down the hill.
Do you remember Thanksgivings that were snowy?
Yes, there were some Thanksgivings that were snowy, and then there were others but we still went outside to play no matter what the weather was.
Well, was the focus of the Thanksgiving celebration the harvest, or was it having the animals butchered so that you had the meat?
I think both of them would have contributed to it, but I imagine a big thing was the butchering, so that there was always some of that on hand to fix a meal around.
And what are you going to do for this Thanksgiving?
I will be with two of my three children and most of their families. my one daughter loves to cook, and she likes to do turkey. So that's what we will be having is turkey and getting together with the families. And it's just always a good time when we can get together.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we've been talking with Donna Drake Nall, her memories of life growing up on the farm in rural Polk County many years ago, and what it's like today.
Well, now that we're leaving our nostalgic interviews, I'd like to go back to Virtus, because he had one very special memory of a very special Thanksgiving that wasn't in Iowa.
I can remember Thanksgiving really while I was over in Korea. In 1952, the Thanksgiving was we had turkey, and they put about five turkeys in an immersion pot or whatever, a big can, and they heated them up and boiled them, and they did about probably five or six of them. And that was during the they had so many turkeys in Iowa and everywhere else, we had turkey about once a week. We had one meal a day that was fixed, I guess. That was quite a Thanksgiving, I'll tell you.
Well, why?
I remember that. All the Army cooks did a good job. If you had, like, boiled turkey.
Well, if you have boiled turkey, how can you have gravy?
I don't know how they made gravy. But they did.
Well, that's the important thing. They got it made. So what made it so special?
It seemed like it was a ceasefire. Didn't hear nothing going over my head.
That was your most memorable Thanksgiving.
Yes, it was. I'm thankful that I got back from the Korean War alive. It was a tough one.
That was something to be thankful for. And that, of course, is the kind of thing that people often do mention. Virtus also mentioned his brother's recovery from a very, very serious accident.
Yes, and as we look around, just as our friends and family this time of year, a community is a thing to be thankful for. Go down to the coffee shop today, and I had a cup of coffee waiting for Susan to need my services here. And so I looked on the table, and it was covered with these little bits of paper, and someone had left little thoughts for other people to pick up and take along. Really, truly, this did happen today here in Ames. It was down at Cafe Diem, and I picked one up. And I think a little bit of optimism in these times when the news is not so good, and we've got lots of things to worry about. It's nice to have something that you pick up on a table at a coffee shop that kind of makes you smile. And this is what I picked up. It's written in an orange felt tip marker, so it's rather colorful. It says, "Even if the crayons are broken, you can still color." So that's a nice thing to remember. I like that. That's good. What are your plans for Thanksgiving, Susan?
Oh, I have a very special Thanksgiving, but you only can appreciate just how special it is if you hear my whole story.
Oh, let's back it up. Go ahead and do tell.
Well, when I was little, from almost the time I can remember, I lived in a hotel, and my mother managed the dining room, and she was always too busy to even eat with me. From age 4 to age 11, we never ate together. So I have no memories of Thanksgiving up until age 11. And then we sold the hotel, and my two parents and I moved to a house in town. And she was so happy to get to be doing her own cooking instead of planning meals for hundreds of people every day, because this was a hotel in an army town. So it was really, really busy. So I remember her wonderful food and what she'd fix, the traditional things, the turkey, the stuffing, the dressing, the vegetables, and the pumpkin pies and everything. But there were only three of us, and I don't remember anything except the good food. It was actually rather dreary in retrospect. And then I got married very young. I got married at 19, and I fixed my first Thanksgiving dinner in 1956. And I have been making Thanksgiving dinner ever since, even when both of our parent mothers moved to Ames. And now that's a story that Lana has encouraged me to tell. Our mothers were both really wonderful people, and I was very close to both of them. I'm very close to my mother, but Fritz's mother and I just clicked from the time we met. But our mothers were very, very different. And in terms of what they enjoyed eating and drinking, anything that one liked, the other really didn't like. And they were always very polite, but I knew that when Fritz's mother had her second martini and my mother was very politely trying to sip a little glass of sherry, that my mother was unhappy and Fritz's mother was just relaxing. And the same way with the turkey. Fritz's mother thought that a nice, juicy, bloody turkey was just right, just hated those dry turkeys. And my mother, of course, could hardly eat this bloody turkey. And sort of like this, and it was so bad that I would lie awake nights before Thanksgiving dreading the experience, because you'd say, oh, well, you can't miss. One's going to be happy. Yes, but one's going to be unhappy. And I always thought about the unhappy one rather than the happy one.
That's a Thanksgiving tradition, too. Who's ever putting on the meal is concerned about all the guests, and guaranteed you have all these wonderful personalities coming around your table. And yes, they're all different. And that is actually, I think, women across America and whoever's cooking the Thanksgiving dinner, that's part of the tradition, too. Everyone frets quite a bit. How did you resolve this problem?
Well, I did something that actually probably made both of our mothers a little unhappy. I just said, we'll have two Thanksgivings. Fritz's mother's birthday was on Thanksgiving. I mean, she always celebrated it on Thanksgiving. I don't think she even knew which of the days it was, but we would celebrate hers first and have the juicy turkey, and then the drier turkey would be served the next day. And it was really pretty easy for me because of they pretty much liked the other things. They liked the cranberry sauce and the mashed potatoes, and creamed onions was from Fritz's family, but my mother liked the creamed onions. So everything was fine except that they were not together. And so we could thoroughly enjoy each one of them when they were with us, because we both liked both of our mothers. We just knew they were different. And so I know Fritz's mother was a little hurt because she thought that my mother didn't want to have dinner with her, and I tried to explain, no, it's not my mother, it's me. I just want to have you just for myself on your birthday.
And it made you a lot more calm as a hostess.
Oh, yes.
Which helps a meal a whole lot.
Yeah, I really enjoyed those It was, and it's such an easy way to have two wonderful dinners.
One of the best things about Thanksgiving is the leftovers.
That's
so
right.
So what are you doing this year?
Well, of course, as I said, then I started to make my own dinners. I fix turkey every year. And when my daughter moved to town about 25 years ago, she would always come over. And, it was a big thing. She loved to come over for Thanksgiving dinner. And she would mash the potatoes. And I can't remember. It seemed like she was wonderful. She always knew where everything was. She could fix things just right. She was a great help. It was wonderful. And I just took it for granted. I was always going to be stuffing the turkey and so forth. Well, this year, we are invited out to her house. She has a beautiful house on the edge of town she just moved to. And actually, I will tell the studio audience, Fritz, who made the table here in the KHO studio, made a beautiful dining room table for her. And he thinks it's the best thing he has ever made. So he enjoys sitting at this table. We enjoy looking out the bay window at the woods. And I'm going to enjoy eating a dinner that I didn't cook.
Congratulations, Susan. I think this is a wonderful thing to happen on Thanksgiving.
I am so thankful.
Bravo. Bravo. I want to mention that I mentioned before that I think leftovers are one of the best things in the whole world, and somehow turkey and dressing is a wonderful leftover thing. I want to mention that if you're stuck this time of year for a Thanksgiving recipe, you can go to the Donna Lana Kitchen page on the KHOI website, and there are recipes there. Pick up some ideas. Donna Prisgintis actually had this wonderful recipe that she gave us for pumpkin cobbler. For those of you who do not like to fuss with pie crusts, this is a dandy version of pumpkin that does not need a pie crust, and it's easy. So go to khoifm.org, find the talk section, find the Donna Lana Kitchen section, go to recipes, find out things there, and have yourself a good bunch of leftovers. I think that's wonderful.
Yes, now you're making me feel just a little sad. Maybe I'm going to have to cook.
Oh, cook something.
I'm going to cook something. Okay. I bring rolls and, you know, so it's my turn to bring the extra stuff. She always used to bring the pies, and she's making the pies.
Ah.
But the leftover turkey is what I'm thinking about. The only way to get leftover turkey, I think, is probably to cook a turkey.
Well, just show up at her house the next day.
Or with a baggie and say,
that's fine. That's
you can't eat all that turkey.
No, of course not. Of course not. Just as we're talking about turkey here, there's a wonderful fiddler in eastern Iowa called Al Murphy. He has been one of the treasures of this state for a long time, and he belongs to a group, a band called Harvest Home. What a nice thing to think about this time of year. Harvest Home. And he's got a great fiddle tune. Let's listen to his fiddle tune, Cripple Turkey. Thank you.
We've been listening to the Crippled Turkey on the Thanksgiving special, the Local Talk, Donna Lana Kitchen combined show. This is KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area.
Yes, and a fine community radio station it is, too.
Your hosts today are Susan Franzen for Local Talk and
Lana Nachtigall for Donna Lana Kitchen.
We've been talking with Virtus Brockman and Donna Drake Nall about their memories, which prompted reflections on the deeper things that people are thankful for. And then Lana asked me to tell my story about what I'm thankful for this Thanksgiving, but I haven't heard about what you're thankful for, Lana. What are you thankful for this Thanksgiving?
Oh, let's see. I'm thankful for a dry firewood pile. I am thankful for good friends and family, and I am thankful for a good community that not only just takes care of each other, but it's nice to know people that push your limits and get you to be creative. I like that. Like Susan saying, let's be on the radio. Okay. It's nice to be pushed a little bit. That those minutes of creativity and working together, that's what I'm thankful for. Because when you do something together, it always ends up being better than the sum of its parts. I like that. I have some Thanksgiving sort of memories, too. Thanksgivings now always get together, and we always cook something or other, and I don't always make the turkey. Usually somebody else does, and sometimes I make the turkey. I like duck whenever we run around duck, too. Sometimes we have duck. But I grew up in Wisconsin, and traditionally Thanksgiving has a lot of blaze orange around it because that is the season for deer hunting. So, yes, all the guys would come in out of the woods and hang up their dripping, wet, cold blaze orange hunting things and talk about deer that they saw, missed, or even got a shot at. But still, people would gather around for the Thanksgiving meal. It was a time when Mom or Grandma or my aunt would get out their best china. I always liked to kind of be part of that kitchen thing. I enjoy being part of it. I didn't really learn to cook until I left home. But I was always allowed to set the table. I was allowed to pour the wine, a small bit of Mogan David, in really, really pretty little stem glasses. I don't know where my mom got them. And even my brother and I, when we were quite small, got a very, very small little shot glass full, just as a reminder that that was a special, special gathering. It was always something. And nobody drank wine in my family except for these meals. So it was a special, special sort of thing. And I enjoyed that for Thanksgiving, that sort of Thanksgiving memory. So I'm thankful that I grew up like that. Also, because I came from a German Lutheran church background, it was another excuse to go to church. My goodness, my congregation up there would go to church at the drop of a hat, and if it was Thanksgiving, you put your turkey on hold, and you went to Thanksgiving service. So we did that first and then met for a noon meal. So that was always part of Thanksgiving, too.
Here in central Iowa, we have a couple of Lutheran churches that are celebrating with an evening service. And I discovered this from the Story City Herald in the community calendar. They said that in Roland, that there would be a Thanksgiving service in the community center with the combined Salem-Bergen choirs. Well, I had never heard of Salem in this area, so I looked up on the map and I found that Salem, Iowa, is way down in the southeast corner. And I thought, wow, are they bringing the choirs from way over there to Roland for this very special service? So I called up Pastor Dennis Sandman and asked him about their service. And this is what he told me.
Well, I'm Dennis Sandman, and I've been pastor here at Salem for going on 4 years now. And when I first came to this congregation, I got together with the other Lutheran church, Bergen Lutheran Church's pastor, Adam Sterrett, and we explored the idea of having a joint worship service, one that we could invite the entire community to. And when we got to discussing that, it just seemed that having it at a place where everyone was familiar with, we decided to move to the community center and have those that may not belong to a church here in town, that they would feel free to come and worship the Lord and give thanks for all the blessings that we have had the past year. So from that start, we have continued to do that. Now this is our third year that we're doing it, in order to not only be in fellowship in both churches, but invite those in town that would like to come together and just say thank you.
I have been talking to people from farms where Thanksgiving was truly thanks for the end of the harvest. And I wonder how you address Thanksgiving at the Salem and Bergen Lutheran churches.
Well, we're thankful for many things. And as you mentioned, this is a farming community, and we have been blessed by God with some of the best soils in the world, actually, and farmers to take care of the land and produce things. So, of course, we're thankful for the production that is found in this whole area, and I guess in America as well. So, again, we just felt that it was important that we get together with our neighbors to say that thanks and be so grateful for what we do have.
Now, in Roland, many of your townspeople, the people in your community, are not directly connected with the land. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. But yet, it takes more than farmers, and both churches, we have a number of farmers in our congregations. But again, the important thing is worshiping our Lord, and we can do that together, no matter what our vocation is. Here at Salem, we have a number of teachers from the school system that are working with the children in the communities, and of Roland Story and Roland and Story City. And there are also a number of retired people that live here. So we've got a mix that we have the children, we have the middle-aged people, and we have those that have retired that all can come together to work towards extending the kingdom of God. Here at Salem, our Sunday school has been growing year after year as these younger families continue to come to church and, of course, are invited. And that's one of the functions we have here at the church, is to teach the young children so that they have a basis for their lives as they grow up and know what God has for them to do. So they're always invited, and we have a strong Sunday school program to help do that type of thing.
Could you tell me the difference between the Salem Lutheran Church and the Bergen Lutheran Church?
Well, historically, it had to do with Scandinavian countries. One was a Swedish background and one was Norwegian, and it just continued to be that way. Nowadays, that doesn't seem to make any difference. In fact, I'm 100% German, and they allowed me to come in and preach and teach. So God does wonderful things, but that was primarily the background. One was a high church. And Salem here has the Haugi tradition, which a number of people aren't aware of. But he came to this country and started a church, and it was just a different type of worship that the churches did. They both are strong Lutheran traditions. So I'd like to extend an invitation to all that hear this, and it is an ecumenical service, so that we invite whatever backgrounds people have in their religious life to come, to be in fellowship, and give thanks for the blessings that they have had And following the service, there will be pie and ice cream where people can get together and be in fellowship. And if they don't know each other, get to know each other and continue that fellowship, hopefully, throughout the coming year as well.
The paper said that the Salem and Bergen choirs would be singing. What
yes.
are these choirs?
Joint choir. There will be a hymn sung by both choirs, and that's also been a tradition that we've had.
We've been talking with Pastor Dennis Sandman of the Salem Lutheran Church in Roland, telling us about the community Thanksgiving service that will be held at 7 p.m. the evening of November 26th in the Roland Community Center.
Do you know something about Lutheran churches, Lana?
Oh, good heavens. What do you want to know? Well, just that I grew up in one, yes.
But now, when you heard that they were two different nationalities, you did not immediately assume Swedish and Norwegian, which what I think most people in Story County would immediately say. Oh, Swedes and Norwegians can't necessarily go to the same church.
I think that's pretty interesting.
But you did not come. You said you were from German Lutheran.
German Lutheran, yes. Yes. So there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, if you can divide things up and talk about differences, we can do that. That'll be fine. But it's really nice to hear that everybody's getting together for Thanksgiving. And I do hope, well, of course, there will be coffee afterwards and everybody will have a good time.
That's right. And I believe that we did have the mention that the pastor of the Salem Lutheran Church is German, and they do accept him.
See, things change. It's amazing. We're in this century now, and we're just all getting on to be kind of all tolerant all over the place. So I'm really glad that thankfulness kind of encompasses that, too. We can learn to get along. Yes, we can.
Well, people are tolerant in different ways, and I think you have a very sweet example of somebody who is really a curmudgeon and is not feeling particularly friendly toward all this turkey and stuffing and pies and whatever.
Yes. I have something to read here from an author that I enjoy a lot. His name is Calvin Trillin. Calvin Trillin lives in New York City now, and writes for quite often and a longtime staff writer of The New Yorker, and he's also written for The Nation magazine. I've always enjoyed his stuff. His stuff makes me smile. He is a curmudgeon, but he does have Kansas City roots. He grew up in Kansas City, and so he's got a kind of a nice overview on things. He had a very strong opinion about Thanksgiving. Turkey was never one of his favorites. He was always hoping that something a bit more tasty than turkey would be served. He was always hoping for spaghetti carbonara and couldn't understand why we couldn't do that instead. And so he sort of wrote this justification for spaghetti carbonara as our national Thanksgiving dish. This is his history of Thanksgiving in America. In England a long time ago, there were people called pilgrims who were very strict about making sure everyone observed the Sabbath and nobody cooked food with any flavor and that sort of thing. And they decided to go to America where they could enjoy freedom to nag. The other people in England said, "Glad to see the back of them." And they put on some Brussels sprouts to cook to the death. In America, the pilgrims tried farming, but they couldn't get much done because they were always putting each other in the stocks for crimes like suspicion of cheerfulness. The Indians took pity on the pilgrims and helped them with their farming, even though the Indians thought the pilgrims were about as much fun as teenage acne. The pilgrims were so grateful that they invited the Indians over for a Thanksgiving meal, and the Indians, having some experience with pilgrim cuisine in the past, took the precaution of bringing along a dish of their own. They brought a dish that their ancestors had learned many generations before from none other than Christopher Columbus, who was known to the Indians as the big Italian fella. The dish was spaghetti carbonara, made with pancetta bacon and fontina and the best imported prosciutto. The pilgrims hated it. They said it was heretically tasty and the work of the devil and the sort of things foreigners eat. The Indians were so disgusted that on the way back to their village after dinner, One of them made a remark about the Pilgrims that was repeated for generations and unfortunately caused confusion among historians about the first Thanksgiving meal. He said, "What a bunch of turkeys." So that was a little alternative history of the history of Thanksgiving from the author Calvin Trillin. Bless him. We can use people that have a different point of view. Yes, there he is.
Well, now that you've mentioned turkeys, I guess most people know that Benjamin Franklin thought the turkey should be our national bird because it is native. So it got the name turkey because I think it was taken to Turkey where it was sort of rediscovered by Europeans.
I don't really know why it's called turkey because they're not native to Turkey.
They're native to the United States. And you see a lot of them in Iowa. And I asked Virtus if they ever – he said he never saw a turkey till he came to Marshall County. And he said he didn't ever see them flying around, that they didn't have turkeys to shoot.
I think they've been introduced. They have been introduced to this area, like otters. They reintroduced otters. A lot of nice things. A turkey in the field is really something to see. It's a big prehistoric-looking thing. It's an amazing bunch of things to see out there because usually you do see them in a herd, kind of like – like a herd of deer, but you see
a flock.
It's not a herd, a flock
of turkeys. I've seen them mostly. I've seen them in flocks in trees, and I wondered why nobody ever seemed to go hunting for them. I don't know whether there's a season.
Oh, they do. Definitely. I have had wild turkey, and it's very tasty.
It's very tasty. I was wondering if
they're smart little birds, as I understand that it's quite a deal to be able to hit one because you think they look big and clumsy, but they are not. They're quite able to take care of themselves out there, and yes, I think that would have made a very nice symbol for the United States would have been a turkey.
Well, I'm glad we have them in Iowa. And incidentally, Pat Schlarman was talking about birds that have been introduced or reintroduced. He's working on ospreys. That's a great story.
Oh, good.
Which incidentally, was on Monday's Local Talk.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And today we have been talking with Virtus Brockman, Donna Drake Nall, and Pastor Dennis Sandman. Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison. Music you heard included Over the River and Through the Woods by the Northmen from the CD It's a Holiday, Over the River and Through the Woods by Smoky Mountain Band from the CD Christmas in the Smoky Mountains, Crippled Turkey by Al Murphy from the CD Harvest Home. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all the Local Talk shows we've produced since we went on the air in 2012. We are streaming live as well. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information. There you will find lists of our guests and links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows. Now comes our Thanksgiving. This is our report of how our fund drive went, and we are so grateful to everybody who helped, or all forces in the universe who helped.
It's the end of the year, and we are raising the money we need to operate KHOI in 2015. Our goal at this time has been to raise $40,000, a part of our annual budget, by January. So this is a great time for you to join KHOI. We just completed our first ever member fund drive. And thank you so much for all of you who have joined so far. Everyone who volunteers to make KHOI happen is more thrilled and grateful than we can express by your support. Because of your participation, we are a little more than halfway to our goal, with around $21,000 raised. If you have not joined KHOI yet, please consider doing so before the end of the year. Basic memberships are $40, Premium memberships are $100, and we are looking as well for those of you who can become sustaining members with a donation of $250 or more. But of course, we are appreciative of any donation you can make. Please donate online to KHOI at khoifm.org, or just come by KHOI Studios with your donation or send it in the mail. You can, incidentally, our studios are 410 Douglas, right across the street from the Octagon, right next door to the Ames History Center.
Look for the Ames Pantorium sign, which is one of the better signs that hangs in on Douglas Avenue.
You can find our address at khoifm.org if you don't have a chance to write it down now. We are actually becoming hopeful that we will exceed our $40,000 goal, which means we will be able to spend less time next year raising money and more time doing at KHOY what we love doing best, building community through communication.
Yes, this is a community radio station, and like I said, a fine radio station it is. Do support it is. Do support this radio station and send in your pledges. Thank you.
Thank you for your participation. Without you, we would just be a few people talking to each other in a nice room. And thank you for your membership, and thank you for listening. We'll see you again on the radio.